Excuse me, this conference will now be recorded.
Okay, thank you very much. Who would like to take a roll call?
I'll do that for you, Ray. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone on today's GNSO Council Ops call on Wednesday, the 24th of February. We have Ray Fassett, Avery Doria, Ron Andruff, Wolf-Ulrich Knoben. From staff, we have Glenda Saint-Géry, Ken Bauer, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. And we have apologies from Julie Headland and Rob Hogarth. If I could remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Ray.
Okay, thank you very much. Real quick, hey, Wolf, did you have a chance to reach out to Tony Holmes regarding his participation?
Yes, well, I did not have a direct contact. Well, I forwarded to him so by email, but I did not have any reaction. I don't know.
Okay.
Not yet, but he's informed about it.
Okay, great. So we'll just keep working that and see if we can get him back into the swing, at least a couple meetings a month. Then I'm sure all of you have seen the revised document that came from Ken Bauer on the abstention language to go into the rules of procedure, section 4.5 under voting, which is section 4. Obviously very, very involved, but it has passed ICANN legal eyes, if you will, and we basically have the blessing now to go ahead and send it over to the OSC for their review. I know I just sent that yesterday and it is a rather long document, but is there any discussion on that? And I am seeking approval from the work team, or at least not objection, to go ahead and now get this in front of the OSC with the recommendation as well that we try to get it in front of the council for the Nairobi meeting. Any comment or discussion on this?
This is Ron. Ray, I have no objection to sending that on to the OSC.
Okay, great. Ken Stubbs did reply yesterday. I'm not sure if it was to me or to the list, but he was okay with doing that as well. Ken is not as active a member of the team, but I think he is following along. Avery, how do you feel? Wolf also acknowledged, I believe, also raised a good comment, as I think we all know, with regards to redacting the names, which I think is a good idea on the one document. And Avery, do you have any opinion on anything?
I always have opinions on everything.
Go.
But I'm kidding. I think it's fine to send it forward. I don't think the names need to be redacted, but I see no problem with redacting it. I understand the point, as it could sideline people's attention, but then again, when they're reading the explanations of why, they also could be a good examples of, hey, you know, for the most part, these were all voluntary, or whatever the proper term we used was. So, redact them or tag them as using them as an example field. But I'm fine either way, and both of them are more work.
Okay.
This is Ron.
Yeah, Ron.
That just does beg the question. Ken's on the call. Was this public record that you got this from, Ken? And if so, then I think the answer is let's just leave it in. Because I think it does help to flesh out, you know, the rationale behind, you know, who did it and why.
This is Ken, and the answer is I did send a note to the list that it is public information, came from gnso.icann.org, from the calendar and the minutes that are published there.
I'm sure of it, that it was also, all these things are public. As I say, it would be interesting, though, if we're going to do it this way, to tag them so that people see which of these, oh, you have that in there. I see, I'm looking at it now. It's all volitional use. I think it's useful. And I don't think the names hurt, but, you know, I think we could also tell who the names were if we really wanted to.
Well, there's a point to that. I mean, there's reasonableness. You're just forcing the user, if they want to, now they have to go back into that public document and try and investigate it on their own, put the puzzle together, assuming someone feels strongly motivated to want to do that. And then the question becomes, why are we making people do that when it's already publicly available anyway?
And this is Aubrey. I mean, I'm saying it as one of the names that would be redacted. So, and I don't care one way or another.
Right. Okay. Speaking. So for me, it was on professional. It's necessary for purpose, you know, have the names disclosed. So if not, you know, then I would say, you know, I would see it that way for me, because before anybody starts to this interpretation of this context, so why should we disclose the name?
Well, I think that, and the answer there, Wolf, is it's public. It's already public knowledge. We're not disclosing anything. We're just taking a public document. We're just bringing that forward as a to demonstrate that the when you look at this chart, you can get a sense of where abstentions happened in the past and how that abstention actually was a no, fell in the no column more often than not. So that's why we're, you know, we're doing this work.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm pausing. Let's see, how do I get off this fence? Let me think about that. Well, I guess I'm kind of rationalizing. You know, I sent an email earlier what my opinion was. I think we should redact it. My thinking was I don't want to distract from the substance of what the exercise is about.
Yes.
And which has a tendency to happen in the ICANN arena.
Yeah.
With when names are used and it's out of context, you know, like as if you're taking it out of context and then you're assigning somebody's name to it. And I need to offer more of an explanation. No, that was just a snapshot. You've paraphrased my what I said. Although it looks like I think Ken thought about that, and it looks like you took direct quotes. But then it's like, well, that wasn't my entire statement. And then we go ahead and make a determination, an opinion of whether it's volitional or not, or obligational, and then somebody could say, well, no, you misinterpreted that.
Well, what we could do, Chair, is
this
we could
is
just take away the name and just leave in the constituency, because it just shows that there are multiple, you know, there's the BC, there's the IPC, NCUC, so other multiple bodies use this. That's more or less where I saw it, not so much the name of the individual wasn't so critical.
Yeah, this is Aubrey again. As I say, the quotes, I expect, are part of the record because of the whole, if you abstain, then you put a formal statement in the record, and in fact, people even have a chance to edit that statement before it's posted in the record. So that is you know, it should be the whole quote. I assume Ken took the whole quote out of the record. The one I read of mine is indeed what I said. Would you also redact it where there were people's names in there? For example, I look at 24 September, and I want to thank Christina, et cetera. So would you also redact names? And there's Edmund Chung is mentioned, and Chuck and Edmund are mentioned in another one. So, in fact, you know, Jordy's is I'm abstaining for the same reason as Chuck and Edmund. So would you translate that to I'm abstaining for the same reason as Anonymous 1 and Anonymous 2 in the vote up top? I'm saying it's more than just deleting their names. You'll have to go through the next column and also do that. And as I say, these are, I assume, Ken, you went to, you know, the motions record of stuff, not the motions, but the posted outcomes. And they are all record, and they've all been verified by the people. But as I say, I'm not going to do the issue either way, but I think it's no biggie.
Well, here's door number three. Okay, door number three is we send over to the OSC the language, okay? And we also say that we did the work team did an analysis, obviously with the support of ICANN staff, to look at how past abstentions in 2009 would have been affected if this language had been in place at the time. And we just come up with a very simple chart of this many, there were this many abstentions, this many we determined would have fallen into a volitional situation, this many would have fallen into an obligational, and this many would have really acted as a no. What was really the purpose of the abstention was to be a no vote. And just leave it very high level. And if anybody in the OSC wants to see the detail of how we arrived at this chart, conclusionary sort of high-level summary chart, then we can provide them the full, including the names, analysis that Ken did. Any thoughts on that? In other words, I think it's good for the work team to show anybody and who we report to as the OSC that, look, this was a prudent step, and we did the work. That's the important part. And these are the conclusions that we came up with, and as a work team, we agreed our reasonable interpretations of those abstentions. We looked at this. Now, do you need to look under the hood and see the whole thing? Well, why? You know, but if you do, here's the whole thing if you want to see it.
This is Ron. You know, Chair, we're having a long conversation about this, but I'm not sure exactly why. I don't see, and unless Avery might be a little sharper on this, maybe perhaps she was over there for it, I don't see that there's anything here that is so, you know, would cause such a problem. If my name were attached to one of these, I don't think I would have any problem with that being quoted for that, because I was probably quoted in the on the tape, in the MP3 recording, if it happened to be on a non-face-to-face meeting call, or otherwise I would have been recorded by the scribes. So it's all there. There's nothing, you know, the statements were made, and for these reasons, these people abstained, and this was the homework that we did to get some better sense of, you know, this no versus abstention. So I still don't quite understand what we're holding back. What's inflammatory here? Why are we concerned?
Well, I'll just answer that one real quick. There is an interpretation going on.
No, we're doing a review of what happened here, and these people are stating the reason for their abstention. And,
yeah, then we interpret it, though. Then we make an interpret.
Then staff interprets that to say, this is how it looks. And that was a working document for us. We didn't interpret it. Staff did the homework. Staff did the interpretation. We used it as a background document to our dialogue, and that's why we're submitting it for them to have a better, if they need a better understanding, look at this document.
This is Avery again. If I can add two things. One is, as I said, these abstention statements are actually part of the voting record. You don't even have to go to the tape for them. They're actually part of the vote record. And second, actually, one advantage to having the names is someone could read, says, this reads like volitional. Wait a second, I'm the one that did that, and I don't think it's volitional for the following reasons. And it actually gives us a chance to have a dialogue on, you know, if there is something behind it. So
that's a good point. All right, well, I think Ron's correct. We're spending a lot of time on this. I'm sort of hearing myself that we should send the document to the OSC as part of our work and leave it as is. I think that's what I'm hearing is sort of the over. It's good. It's mitigating both directions, but I think overall that's what I'm hearing. Does anybody disagree? Let's try this. Does anybody disagree with sending the OSC both documents as is?
This is Ken. May I ask a question or make a comment before you take that vote?
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the things Ron said about this is staff's point of view about these documents. True, I did register my judgment or assessment as to how each of these looked, and I asked my colleague Rob Hogarth to overlook it, and he and I agreed on all, and we made a couple little changes back and forth. But I'm wondering if it would be okay to ask the team to go through and ratify what staff had said. In other words, does the team want to say you agree that these judgments or assessments are reflect the team's view on it as well?
Well, yeah, let me clarify that, because that is the approach I took, which is, you know, it's a document that was prepared for us, but when we send it on, we're sending it on as a work team. And the assumption should be that we have reasonably agreed to the interpretations. If we didn't, then we would question you on them.
Yes, and I just would let you know, I'm happy to make any adjustments or amendments.
Understood.
Or that you guys see fit.
Right, that's the way I approach things and for this work team is, you know, when we send something out, the work team is in agreement with what the conclusions are, what the statements are, and then I try not to reach, you know, in communications like that, you know, to overreach what you guys are basically where you're landing on whatever the issue might be. So sometimes that can get tricky too, not to overreach. But in this instance, I would like to make clear that including this document would mean and insinuate or refer, or people should assume, that we have actually agreed with the interpretations as a work team, that we looked at them, read them, and have agreed with the interpretations. Different than a position of, well, staff did this, and we're just passing it along. Slightly different approach there. And that goes. This is a higher. This is a general concept as well, not just to this document, but really just about anything we get and then pass out along. It's the way I approach things. Any problem with that?
None from my side.
Okay. All right. So when I'm at this point, from what I'm hearing of the group, is it's better to go ahead and send the document along with the language as a package, the two documents to the OSC. I think it's important to include the analysis. We could, I mean, door number four is we don't include anything. We just say, here's the language, please approve. But I think it's useful. And I think Aubrey just raised an excellent point where, okay, somebody sees their name and they want to challenge the interpretation we made as a work team. That's only healthy. That can only be good, I think. So anyway, without any further discussion, what I plan to do is send to the OSC both documents as is. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Why don't we move back to the SOI document? Anybody have that open?
Yes.
I had a little bit of a computer problem. I had to get a lot of stuff wiped last week. So I wonder, could someone just kindly just push me the link to our wiki? I realize I don't have it here in my... I've been looking for it for the last few minutes. Gisela? Or Glenn?
Yeah, I'm looking too for you, Ron.
Thank you.
I'll do that for you, Ron.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, yep, I see. Okay. Okay, they're quicker than me.
Yeah, I'm sure they're at their fingertips.
All right. Okay, so the SOI document. Where we left off, if I recall correctly from last week, is we've made it all the way through Section 4, and we're just delving into Section 5. Oh, by the way, everybody got Julie's, well, it's on the wiki, but Julie did an update on the action items from this document that we came up with. And I looked at those, and they seemed reasonably okay to me. I mean, I might do some formatting changes, but the substance of it is, I think, what we asked her to do. Has everybody had a chance to review that?
I, for myself, have not, but I was in agreement pretty well with everything we had gotten to up to that number five. I think that's where we paused, indeed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think she captured what we were looking for. But let's all take a look at it again, in terms of whether she captured the substance. But it looks like to me she has. Now, in Section 5, its heading is titled "Procedures to Ensure Truthfulness and Completeness of Statements of Interest and Disclosures of Interest." So this concept of ensure truthfulness and completeness. And where I was raising a question on was, how do you have procedures to ensure truthfulness? And in just those words, procedures to ensure truthfulness sort of indicates an authority, a policing aspect. So that's where we left off. And I wonder if there's any discussion on this. So 5.1, we can all read it. ICANN staff shall review relevant parties' statements of interest to ensure truthfulness and completeness. And that flagged to me what we want ICANN staff to do.
I think that this is Ron. I was at the same point that the word truthfulness is, it's relative to whoever's looking at it, and we don't necessarily need to put staff in the position of being a judge of that. But I think we should be rewording the language to try to achieve this idea. So incompleteness as well as something that is, I'm not sure. I don't want to walk away from the truth. you know, but at the same time, I just appreciate the fact that we cannot put anyone, whether it's staff or, you know, a chair of a committee, to say, well, you're going to determine whether this was truthful or not. So critical, we have the complete ask. Everything is complete. There's no incompleteness. How we address the truthfulness, I'm still up in the air on that one.
So let's let's go with the completeness aspect of it for a minute. So let's talk about like resource management. Do we really want a person that reviews all of these manually and tries to establish that they're complete, or is this an online form where there are required fields, and if the fields are not completed, the submission is not accepted?
This is Avery.
Yes, Avery.
I tend to think that this is as problematic as truthfulness. I mean, I tend to believe, I don't know how one captures it in writing, but what you're essentially doing is a giggle test. And basically you put something out public and people look at it, and enough people know enough about enough people that it either passes muster or somebody asks a question. I think completeness is so difficult. Does that include my high school graduation place? You know, it's completeness within what's pertinent. And so you're asking someone to do something as subjective as truthfulness. And so it's you know, we need to have somebody review it for, you know, reasonableness, which is, yes, blatantly subjective, but, you know, at least it's you know, by making them publicly readable, they are reviewed for reasonableness by all and sundry. And anyone can say, wait a second, that's not reasonable.
This is Ron. I was following more from the perspective of what you said, the latter position, Ray, that in fact the completeness aspect, before I say that, I do support what Avery just said. It really is passing the giggle test. Everybody could look at it and say, that's reasonable. But the completeness element for me was more that the document, it was an online form, and that in fact, you know, if there were 10 boxes, every one of those boxes had something in it to make sure that even if it wasn't relevant, it said not applicable. But every box, in fact, was full, and that in the each individual has completed the task of filling in those boxes.
Mm-hmm.
So it was more, that was more an academic, just, you know, a check, as opposed to a review of how complete I was.
And that can be automated. So completeness,
yes, must be automated.
Okay,
yeah.
So completeness is an automated process, which then inherently means less human resources having to be attributed to it. And I think that's an important point for us to think about in coming up with procedures. If we can, unless there's an overwhelming need to attribute human resources to something, let's not burden, it doesn't need to be burdened. Okay, so I'm kind of in, now here's another question. Is it reasonable, though, that the procedure can only be online? What if I'm in an area of the world that I don't have access to online?
You'd have to send it to staff, and staff would have to put it online. It all has to be online. It has to be readily accessible to anyone who wants to go and look at it.
Oh, yeah. I guess I don't mean the actual form. I mean the ability to complete the form. Is it only an online process? Or can you manually send in a form where somebody at ICANN is assigned the role of getting the mail and opening it up and typing it in themselves? Or do you have the procedure B? You have to fill it out online. And so, sorry, that's all we have. And then how many different languages?
Well, okay, so you're asking a number of good questions.
Yeah.
I think the reality is that what we're talking about here are work teams or GNSO counselors, so it's a specific body of body of people, you know, board members, staff members. I don't know if their staff members would be filling out an SOI. So it's really community members that are participating in work teams or GNSO-appointed work. Those people will have to be online to be able to participate in that process. You can't not be online and be on a work team of some sort, because you wouldn't receive documentation, you wouldn't be up to speed on any of the elements of that working activity. So I think it is an online form, and I don't see any reason why we shouldn't continue to go that way.
This is Avery.
Yes.
I would actually, you might have the possibility of some people in some remote areas where they would have email access that would allow them to receive documents and such, but you might not have sufficient bandwidth for online form thing. So while I think the notion of getting a letter and typing it in is difficult, I do think that perhaps in exceptional circumstances, allowing for somebody to fill in the form on email and having somebody cut and paste may not be an unreasonable exception for those who may be bandwidth challenged.
All right, let me ask this question then. Where does the burden rest at the end of the day and on whether one of these things is completed before the individual is able to participate? Does it rest with the chair of whatever it is that's going on, or whatever the group is?
Yes, because the chair is asking the question at the start of the meeting, after they've taken a roll call, has everyone completed their SOIs and DOIs? Has that been done?
Mm-hmm.
So he's asked the question. Now, if anyway, that doesn't mean the chair had to go back and check everyone's. He's asking everyone to confirm that they have, because they cannot start the activity until they've confirmed that they have.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more a question of confirmation at the start of the meeting rather than the chair actually going back and doing the legwork. And that's exactly where the point comes, that somebody raises their question and says, you know, I was looking at the SOI DOIs yesterday of Joe Blow, and it seemed to me that it wasn't complete. And then staff would then go back, find that document, have a look at it, and say, yeah, that's true. There's 10 answers here, and we've only received 8. And then that would get cleaned up. It might just be a housekeeping matter that just, you know, the first person didn't feel that those questions were relevant, so it left the box blank as opposed to putting not applicable. So should be a very simple process. This should not be something that's adding extra burden to any chair.
So you don't want to put the added, I don't know if you call it added. You don't want to put the burden on the chair. You want staff to do it. You want staff.
I want the chair to ask the question, and I want the work team members to respond affirmatively or negatively. And if it's negative, then the chair would have to ask. Well, then I'll have to ask you to recuse yourself from this meeting today, until such time as it's up to date. On the other hand, if there's a third party that sees something not complete, they just happen to be looking through the night before and they find it's not complete, and that person does not confirm, that individual who hadn't completed the form doesn't confirm it, then staff would be asked to go back and check that form of this particular so-and-so and see if, in fact, that is correct, it's complete or incomplete. That's the completeness test.
Well, given the different internet connections around the world and where you're at, is it fair to say today that the rare exception is going to be somebody that only has, say, an email accessibility but not the ability to hit the online forms or be able to do an online form? Is it fair to say that's really the rare exception?
Not if you look at Africa. Most of them will not have necessarily online form capability. They'll have mostly an email capability.
Mm-hmm.
And so it depends on how much outreach we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think, Ivor, you're also referring to not as much as bandwidth, as much as, you know, documents. For example, the Windows 7 and all these newer softwares coming out will have a DOCM, D-O-C-M document, or a D-O-C-X document that older software won't open. So I think that it's not just about the bandwidth issue, it's about just the software issue. But again, if these people are members of a work team, they would have to be in some way capable of participating with the rest of the work team. Otherwise, you're going to have one individual that's basically, you know, it's law of caravan. If that person has to receive written documents by mail, then that will be the speed of that work team. So I think that this has to be just a precondition that if someone's working on a work team that they have internet access to be able to trade documents, share documents, discuss online, and actually be able to edit a document as we are doing with this one, add comments and so forth. And I don't disagree with what you're saying.
I'm saying
we have to we've got to amp it up a little bit here. Otherwise, the work teams will be working in slow motion.
Yeah. And let me just back up 1 minute before you go, Aubrey, and I'll let you go. I'm not looking to debate different cultures or capacities. What I'm trying to find, what I'm trying to get an idea about is, you know, what is the minimalist approach we have to take here? Is it snail mail? You know, I mean, I think that's unreasonable. I think there is a certain level of reasonableness that you have connection to the Internet in order to be able to participate with ICANN activities. Now, where now is it just email and not, you know, websites or what have you? But I think we as a work team have just sort of get to a position of what's reasonable here that we should expect of a work team member. And I don't think it's regular mail.
Ray, this is Ken. Can I interject a question?
Mm-hmm.
You guys are spending some time on the sort of mode of delivery of the SOI / DOI, and I'm wondering if that's even necessary in the context of this document. You want to do? Can the procedures be silent as to how the form is in fact completed, or do you really want to specify here? It must be done online, or if it can't be done online, then it has to be done via email. I mean, it would seem to me that if it is done online, someone like the secretariat, you know, would periodically or maybe gets an email that says, hey, an SOI just came up. I think she regularly finds out when that happens, and there's just a quick review of the six or eight or whatever number of questions there are to be sure that you know, there wasn't an omission of information or something like that. And if there was, then she goes back to the individual and says, hey, you missed question seven, and it gets fixed up. I'm just wondering if that's simple enough here.
Well, let me comment on that real quick. I mean, there is a responsibility. When we say procedures to ensure, that is putting a responsibility somewhere. I'm not against it, but if we are vague on what the procedures are to ensure, I can only – and these are the rules of procedure, by the way – I can only imagine that it's just going to be very ambiguous later and we've not done anybody any favors. But with that said, I'm not trying to influence anybody in any particular direction. Aubrey, I think you wanted to comment.
Yeah, I do agree that there is a minimal threshold. I think it's email access. I do believe there's a minimal threshold for documents, and it's Word before DocX. And it's PDFs, but I think to require more than that, and you know, I'm saying this even though I'm the one that's trying to get everybody as much as possible to participate on Wiki, but I know that on Wiki I can throw off a Word, whatever it is, you know, pre DocX Word document and send it to someone. So yes, I agree. We're not doing snail mail, and we're not sending documents out UPS, but I don't know that we can demand more than basic connectivity. I'm not going as far as the ITF that says all documents are text. I think Word is cool. I think DocX and DocM go too far, you know, but that's where I'm at.
And this is Ron, and I think that, you know, Ken, you're correct in terms of the SOI DOI, but I think what's been uncovered here is a procedural element about how work teams might work in the future that really should be addressed. And I'm in line with what Avery said. There's some basic we have in the procedural applications that we're putting forward. That would be one of them, saying that, you know, documents would have to be in a very basic form so that people have access, and that work team members from countries with lesser bandwidth or don't have the software would have access and be able to participate in these work teams.
This is Ken Amia. I just wanted to let you know that the working team group, the working team work team,
mm-hmm.
does in fact have procedures about the startup and the chairing the working groups, and it there's a specific mention in there that these SOIs and DOIs need to be in place, and I think there's actually a step in the chair's procedure to do that. So you won't necessarily have to include it here.
Oh, good. So maybe we can bounce this ball back to them just to make sure they have addressed a minimum threshold for documentation that a work team member can access. Can we take that step?
Yeah, I don't think, this is Aubrey, I don't think we actually covered this email and basic document structure. I think that's one thing we didn't cover. We did cover SOIs, and we didn't. I don't think we covered, you know, DOIs. But And I don't think we ever covered formats and things like that, though perhaps we should have, and perhaps that should be kicked back to them in terms of working group modalities, as it were.
That seems to be the place where this discussion should be held. So that would be great. That would, from my point of view, I think that would be a step forward.
Okay, I had an interruption in the conversation. Where should this conversation be held?
Ken,
working group work team.
Yeah, Ken brought our attention to the fact there's a working group work team that are developing how the modalities of a meeting will be held and so forth. So this would be something that they could bring into their language, so we don't have to worry about it here. We'll just refer back to that working group. But in fact, we do agree that there will be a minimum of documentation, reading, or accessing capability.
All right, so let's look back at the heading then. I don't disagree with that. So do we take everything that's in 5.1 and leave it blank? Just leave the heading and to be determined?
No, I think we're still on the point of this, you know, completeness of the statement of interest. That's again, we talked about that at the early part of this conversation on this topic. That has to be reviewed, and that staff can go back and check that if anyone has reason to believe something's not complete. The truthfulness aspect we parked, but the completeness has to be there. So 5.1, if you take just drop the word truthfulness out of there, I think that, you know, we're that paragraph remains, you know, intact. Just take the word truthfulness or untruth, the last part of the sentence, out, and that 5.1 stays intact.
All right, and then how do we go to this working group work team to provide some?
Well, my understanding is Avi will take that back to that team and say this is something that came up in the GCOT, and that we on that in the other group, the other work team, they should clean that language up and get it into their documents. We don't address it at all here because it will be picked up on their side. That's how I understand. Is that correct, Avery?
Yeah, I could certainly, you know, after this meeting, send a mail off to that working team saying, hey, this issue came up, and I don't think we handled it. Do we want to? And, you know, or what do we want to do about it or something like that? I could certainly pass it through.
Okay. I'm not against making that change in suggestion. Wolf, do you have any thoughts on that? Apparently not. Okay.
Ken, I have a suggestion.
Yep. Sure, please.
As I read this this 5.1, it's okay, and then to the second, if ICANN staff has a reason to believe that a relevant party statement of interest is not complete, take out truthful, ICANN staff shall notify the chair in lieu of being able to contact the chair, the vice chair of the situation. Staff shall then notify the relevant party to seek clarification regarding the area of incompleteness. You know, I think when it was an untruth or a truthfulness issue, there was a kind of a protocol. We go to the chair, then we go to the vice chair, then we go to the party. But if it's just a matter of completeness, I'm wondering if we should reverse that order. All right, the first step is to go to the relevant party and say, can you please complete this? In the absence of being able to conduct that, then you go to the vice chair and then the chair maybe. Does anybody see my point?
Absolutely. I agree. This is Ron.
Yeah, I'd agree with that logic.
I'll reword that when I send this back to Julie.
Thanks, Ken. All right, so I think that takes care of, kind of moves us on to 5.2, right?
Mm-hmm. So maybe truthfulness falls in here. So the first in the 5.1 is complete. This 5.2 is truthfulness. If there are concerns about truthfulness of a relative party statement. And just look at this paragraph with just the word, you know, if there are concerns about truthfulness and taking it from that perspective. This is the giggle test.
Well, that's interesting. So would there always be on standby this ad hoc five person, or does ad hoc mean there wouldn't always be on standby? These five people that are to review the concern of truthfulness.
It's an interesting point to look at whether or not there would just be like 6 months standing bodies that just stands at the ready, and at the end of the 6 months it dissolves and it rotates through to another group of people. So it's a standing activity within the GNSO that there would always be at any given time a number of people, and it just rotates through all of the GNSO members. It becomes part of a standard part of their activities, just like, you know, as an American citizen, you have to go and do jury duty. So, you know, you get called, and so you're ready, to do jury duty. If something comes up for that period of time, there's no cases called, then you don't do it. In the same way here, we might have just a standing group of people ready to respond at any given time, as opposed to having to form a team or a group like that. There's one standing at the side waiting.
All right, this is Ken again. I wonder if I might make a comment.
Yeah, Ken, go ahead.
Same basic thrust as in 5.1. When thinking about truthfulness, it strikes me that you might have a jury, right, to settle questions of validity. But if it's just completeness, I'm wondering if 5.2 is even necessary. Because if you go to the relevant party and you get the information that you need, then you go to the chair and vice chair. If that fails, maybe the answer is if after that point, the information still isn't provided, then the person is not permitted to continue until it is.
So you're going back to completeness versus truthfulness.
Isn't the idea in this whole section to take the word truthfulness out entirely? So even in the heading, it's going to say procedures to ensure completeness only.
But I think Ron was introducing back again. Let's look at this again. Can we insert truthfulness back into the document? Under 5.2, which would mean, I suppose, going back to the heading and putting in truthfulness.
Yeah, you'd almost reverse it. You'd say to ensure completeness, because that's 5.1, and truthfulness, 5.2.
Okay.
Yeah, Ken, I was basically suggesting that if there are, the question is who can judge whether someone's made a truthful statement or not. So I think the way 5.2 leads, it says, if concerns about the truthfulness of a relevant party's SOI, DOI are raised by staff or members of the community, that going that direction. So there's a concern. Somebody feels, this guy hasn't really been truthful with us, and it's really important that we bring this to the light. Then there's some recourse.
Thank you. I understand now. That helped.
Is this the same working group, work team? Do you think this falls under their area than ours?
This is Ken. I don't think so. No, I think the...
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I agree with Ken.
To disagree.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Oh, it doesn't. Oh, darn. I thought I had you guys disagree.
Yeah.
Okay.
No. I was agreeing with Ken.
Okay. All right. I was just kidding, by the way. All right. All right. So let's go back to it. First of all, high level, 30,000 feet. Should there be something with regards to truthfulness in here? I think I'm hearing from Ron. He kind of favors the notion, at least further investigating it. I'm not against it. Avery, what do you think about the whole idea of truthfulness?
I don't believe in truth, so I have this real problem. I believe in, I don't believe in being able to prove truth. I tend towards reasonableness. I just think who's going to go around calling people liars? I find it problematic, I guess.
This is Ken with the
word.
Would the word validity help here?
I don't think so.
Yeah, that's just painting with another brush, with another color, but it's the same word. I think the key, Avery, I don't disagree with you. It's pretty tough to nail that one down. But again, what we're trying to establish here are procedures for a body to do work, and I think we need to address all these things. The old story about a contract is that you write a contract for the moment when you want to dissolve the agreement. It's got nothing to do with how the two bodies will operate. The two parties will operate while everybody's happy. It's when people aren't happy. So that's why we have to put something in here about the procedures. When someone has a concern that another individual has not been wholly truthful in their statements, that they can bring this to the fore. So I, you know, as well as much as we may not want to go there, I think it's incumbent upon us to have some kind of a procedure in there to address this.
Right, so perhaps, this Avi again, perhaps we're talking about when someone wants to question the accuracy and, you know, and then...
So there you go. So if someone has concerns about the accuracy of a relevant party's statement, that's a little bit less ominous than the word truth, that someone lied. Just, oh, it was an oversight of, you know, in the document, you know, I'll make it a little more accurate now. I mean, that may be the way to go.
How about full disclosure? Is that relevant to accuracy?
Well, then you're getting back to truthfulness.
Yeah.
I just read that first sentence. If there's concerns about full disclosure, that means, you know, I've been, you know, holding something back. If there's concerns about my truthfulness, it means I'm a liar. But if there's concerns about, as Abby just stated, you know, I've already lost the word.
Accuracy.
There's all kinds of
That could be interpreted in a much broader way, you know.
Right, there's all kinds of reasons for, you know, a lack of accuracy. You wrote the sentence badly. You forgot a comma. You know,
exactly.
It's ambiguous. It's there's any number of reasons why something might not appear accurate when that are other than truthfulness.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So just to recap here, real quick, is that if we go down this path, it's gonna now branch into a lot of procedures. Right? How do you, what, you know, you can't just say, well, I don't think it's accurate. You have to state why you don't think it's accurate. Right? You have to provide some direction that for people to look. If you want somebody to look at the accuracy, you have to provide them where you think it's not accurate. So this is going to branch off into a ton of rules. And then how do you name these five people? And of course, five is just a placeholder number. Could be three. Could be, who knows? And then there's going to be the issue of, well, how many different constituency or stakeholder groups are there? And
well, let me just stop.
We don't have
everything. Let me stop you for a second.
Sure.
I think there's a number of things you raised, but I would speak to two things. One is, you know, we don't have to keep branching down further and further and further. You know, what we're talking about is if there's a notion of accuracy that someone has a concern about, they have two options. They can bring it up publicly at the meeting, or they can go to the chair privately. Remember when we were talking about these things before, in I think maybe in section 4 or 3, whatever. That's how we kind of finished up. That how does this happen? Does it have to be someone calling someone out publicly, or can they do it in a more discreet way? So what we're saying here is just if there's a notion of inaccuracy, then we need to deal with it. And here's how we're going to go forward, and that can be done, you know, privately or publicly.
Okay, well that's a good point, Ron. That is a good point. I mean, you could stay high level.
Yes,
but if you're going to stay high level, then I don't think you go down the path of offering suggestions like forming an ad hoc five person.
Well, but then the second part comes back to what I said a few minutes ago. In order to avoid people say, well, this committee was selected, you know, because they're out to get this individual or, you know, whatever. You know, you'll always have that kind of stuff. If there was a standing body, if it's a standing procedure, that there will always be at the ready a five- or three-person review committee to address this, and they will be there for a certain period of time, and then they just rotate out and another group comes in. So if anything should happen at any time. Now, if someone in that review team has a conflict of interest, then they will step back and someone will step up. But what I'm suggesting here is that we might consider the idea of having a standing review team, you know, for a certain period of time, then they're done. Their jury duty is over until it comes up time, you know, when they might have to come back into the rotation again. And that way, people couldn't stack the deck for one, you know, one review team over another because they've got a friend in there.
So would we leave it up to this group? I mean, we just leave it there that this group would be formed, this jury, and then leave it to
the chair and the council to figure out how they're going to do that. But that they need to have one of these things at the ready all times.
Yeah, but there has to be scope. I mean, and Aubrey, I'm going to stop. You go ahead.
Yeah, first of all, I think if this particular group decides that there needs to be that particular group, then I think it's incumbent on us
to have to define how it is that it's created and how it is that it functions, you know, because that would be part of the GNSO operation. So I think if we want to create something like that. Now, I know in a group that I'm involved in, the Internet Governance Caucus, which is a lot more unruly than the GNSO Council, if you can believe that. Basically, we indeed did create just this kind of mechanism. We have a yearly appeals team, and you can't be renewed on it. And basically, anytime, you know, people think there's an issue of any sort, you know, they could take it to that appeals team. Now, because we've had it, I believe, in 3 years, we've never had to use it. We've gotten very close to using it, but not. But we did define it. We defined it very strictly. We defined that people were on it, basically couldn't do anything else that year. And that's why it was a one-year thing, kind of like jury duty. And when you were on it, all you could do is sort of watch. You didn't share anything. You didn't participate in anything other than, you know, as an individual. But and it works. But I'm not sure that we want to go down that path. But if we do, I do believe we have to define it. We just can't punt on it and say, hey, guys, you should have something like this and figure it out for yourselves.
Well, but I agree with everything you just said, Aubrey, and I think that's – and I'm happy there's a model out there that we can point to. But, again, we are the – we're a committee, a work team that's going to send this then to the Operations Steering Committee, that's going to send this then to the GNSO. So I don't know how much we should be drilling down. I think we should be identifying this as a 30,000-foot element and saying we would recommend going this way and then let the details be maybe chewed over by the OSC and then finalized by the council themselves in a debate and dialogue. So that's one way to do it. But I think you're right. I mean, it's great that there is a program out there, and the nice part about it is, as you've stated, is since you've had it, it was never used because it was in place. It was enough of a deterrent for people to not overstep or overstate or whatever.
Wolf, is Wolf on the phone?
Oh, yeah. I'm still on the phone, but I have to... I'm following your discussion here.
All right, so can I'm going to put you on the spot. You've heard kind of the different sides. What are you thinking about this?
Yeah.
You want to punt for a minute? All right, well, I'll weigh in. My opinion as a work team member is I don't think we can keep it as much as I would like to, maybe, just keep it high level. I think if we're going to identify the concept of having a five-person group or whatever number of person group, I think we've got to give them some level of procedures and scope of what it is there to be looking at. And sort of different maybe than what Aubrey was describing about the panel at in the government area, whatever that is. It can't be anything and anything and everything under the sun. This is specific to the accuracy of the statements of interest.
Ray, this is Ken, if I might make a suggestion.
Please.
In the working groups, work team, they did define an appeal mechanism and process that would be used for any number of things that can happen in a working group. For example, a minority person doesn't think the chair made the correct consensus call, or you know, things of that type. I don't remember if the SOI, DOI issue was specifically mentioned. I can certainly check, but generally what they basically said is this, and I think it could apply here. If an SOI or a DOI is considered inaccurate, right, if we use that term, then the mechanism is the person who's got the complaint in the working group goes to the chair. And then the chair looks it over and says, yeah, we agree. I agree. It's inaccurate. If they can't resolve it then with the relevant party, then it can go to the council liaison. I think the next step was each working group has a liaison from the council. You wouldn't necessarily know this unless you were on the team, but that's what they're proposing. And then that liaison would take that matter, if necessary, they would make some kind of assessment as to whether they agree or disagree, and then it would ultimately go to the council. So that's the appeal rep. And ultimately, if this inaccuracy was flagrant and it couldn't be resolved at all these lower thresholds, it would go to the council, and that would be the chair. That would be the group of last resort. instead of having this other committee that you're talking about.
Okay, so the first step is to go to the chair.
Correct.
Somebody has an issue with accuracy, you go to the chair, raise the concern. I have a concern here on the accuracy of this individual's statement of interest. The chair then has to make a decision at that moment, right? Or has to say, I agree or disagree. And if they say, I disagree, then it's pretty much full stop. If they say, I agree, then it goes over to this appeals group.
Well, they try to work it out. If the chair says, I agree, then they would go to the relevant party and say, hey, can you fill out this or change the way this is worded so it makes it more accurate? If the relevant party says, no, I'm not changing it, then the chair could take it to the liaison, and then the liaison could take it to the council. It depends on whether it's able to be resolved at any of these lower thresholds, lower levels.
Yeah. This is Aubrey. It's no particular decision. If either the chair – anyone is not happy with the chair's resolution, whether it's the person that made the original complaint or the one that was complained about feels that the chair's resolution is wrong, then they can appeal it to the liaison. If they feel that the liaison's resolution is wrong, then it can be bounced up to the council.
All right, and is any of this process, just out of curiosity, Ken, if you're familiar with that, all that that's going on there in that procedure, does it impact the ability for the chair or the person on the work team to continue their work? Do they have to recuse themselves while...
No.
Because suddenly the chair is under appeal too, right? I mean, the chair makes a decision, and now somebody says, I don't agree with that decision. And in fact, I have reasons to believe why you made that decision, and I'm sending this over to the appeals area, and while that's under review, you're not to be continuing on. Is there anything like that that's been contemplated?
This is Ken. No, there isn't. And I think in the case of an accuracy complaint, I'm not sure you'd want to go to that step, right? If the chair said, okay, I think that this SOI is incomplete, you can't participate anymore. That's essentially a judgment that's been made, right? If it got appealed and the council said, you know, we agree that it is fine as is, then the person was stopped from participating for no good reason, right? So it would seem to me that you wouldn't want to have a step in there where somebody gets thrown off unless it's
no, I wouldn't.
I think the procedures do have something in there for disruptive and unruly behavior that's actually impeding the progress of the team.
Well, I'm not against this idea, Ron. I'd like to hear from you, but where these procedures are, as we're kind of discussing here, where the first line of defense is you go to the chair. The chair then tries to work it out with the individual. If they're not able to do so, or the person that raised the concern doesn't feel it resolved correctly, then it goes over to this other group, that this appeals group. And so we don't create this ad hoc thing.
Yeah, no, I'm good with that. I'm good with that. The issue is that we've got a mechanism. How it happens is, you know, irrelevant. And if there's already something in the works, that's already part of the process. I'm good with that. We don't need to create new things.
So this is Ken. I think one of the things that staff can do here is to tie these all together, right? So if there when that procedure has a specific reference, that becomes part of this paragraph 5.2.
Mm-hmm.
So when something is incomplete, the procedures that are followed are the working group team guidelines, paragraph 7. You know, da da da.
Okay.
And that's the appeal mechanism.
So how close are we able to go ahead and soft draft into 5.2, this mechanism referring to the appeals group?
The document's already in comment, or almost about to come out of comment, I think, at this point, so it's pretty far along.
This is Ken. I believe that we can make a clean reference there. There's going to be some tidiness work staff's going to have to do. It may be the right answer, ultimately, is that the working group guidelines become part of the GNSO operating procedures, and maybe the SOI-DOI procedures become part of the working group section, right? Because we're ultimately going to end up having here is a whole set of procedures that relate to each other, and they'll all need to be integrated in one way or another. And that those decisions haven't been made, of course, but I can fix 5.2 so that it references that particular section as currently drafted.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I remember just not to get off on a tangent, but I remember when we were, the OSC was first being formed and all these different work teams were being formed. I remember the initial confusion was how are all these work teams going to interrelate with each other? How is that puzzle going to finally be put together? And I think, you know, just mentioning that it seems like we're getting there. We're seeing how they can. So I think it's an excellent suggestion if you can go ahead and redraft the 5.2, Ken, where we'll make the assumption for now with regards to this appeals process and put that in there.
Okay. This is Ken. I'll do that.
Okay. Now, that basically takes us to the end of the SOI document. I think to a step in this was to, although Ken just kind of summarized what he's thinking, how this puzzle will eventually be formed, but the SOI is intended to eventually get into the rules of procedure. So, okay, so regardless of that right now, do we want to get this document, or do we feel comfortable that once the revision to 5.2 is made, to go ahead and get this document as well in front of the OSC?
You got my vote. That's Ron.
We've gotten legal review, right? Ken, how do you feel? Do you feel comfortable we've gotten adequate legal review?
This is Ken. I'm not as up on where you guys stand with the SOI DOI document as Julie is. I still see in the document a load of comments. You know, in the other document, when I got a comment resolved, I deleted it. And so I don't know at this point how well you have tracked with all of the issues that have been raised. It seems like you have, but you know, this document needs obviously to be cleaned up. Do you think it's ready? With the changes in 5.1 and 5.2, are all the other changes ready to be cleaned?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
No.
Well, no, just a second, Chair. I mean, I don't, with all due respect.
Please.
We did cover, in the last call, we went through all of those elements one by one, and you asked who had problems, who had questions, you know, with regard to any of the comments or any of the redlined elements, and we went through all of those. So to my knowledge, you know, we are already clean on that, and now we've just covered 0.5. So to my knowledge, I think that we should be looking at a new draft and getting rid of a lot of those things. Many of those things were formatting issues. Some of them were a little more substantial.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody else in the work team had any other comments besides the comments that I had put in, as I understand it, and the ones we had discussed verbally as opposed to writing them in.
Yeah,
I think we are there. Yeah. I think we're pretty close to seeing a clean document on this.
Okay, so let me qualify that when I said no. I agree with what you said. We did qualify and go through a lot of the comments that were leading up to Section 5. So everything through 4.4. And then there were some additional comments on what I have as page 8 that we didn't necessarily review. However, as we looked at, I can look at them now and say a couple of them are just moot at this point because we changed it.
Right.
So that was why I said no, because we didn't necessarily go through each one of these. But if we want to right now, I can look at SC-14 and SC-15 and consider those basically as moot. I'm not sure I understand SC-16. Yeah, and I think SC-17 will become moot. So, but my question is okay. So now we rewrite 5.2. So we've got comments. Let's say we've got legal review and comment based on the current language of 5.2. Now we're going to change 5.2.
Mm-hmm.
Do we need to go back? You know, what's the feeling that we need to go back and get legal opinion again? I don't think it's necessary myself.
Well, I would just say that, you know, with a clean document, you know, it would not hurt to have it passed one more time by legal. But, I don't know how jammed they are over there, and Ken might know better. But the point is, this is just one last look because we have cleaned this stuff up and gotten rid of all of these side comments. So that wouldn't be a bad idea before we send it on, in my view. But if we feel we want to get this done more expeditiously, so for Nairobi, there's some concrete elements on the table, both for the OSC and perhaps the GNSO, then we can go forward with it right now. But if we can afford
to have another week and have staff review a clean document, I would suggest we go that way.
All right, so let's see if we can get a consensus on that. Aubrey, how do you feel about it? Would you like to see legal have another crack? Cursory?
I think clean document is important. I don't know whether we need legal to go through it again, but, you know,
mm-hmm.
I don't have strong opinions.
Yeah. Okay. Wolf?
Personally, I don't have also a strong opinion, but I think, well, it could be helpful, you know, because I learned through this process by hearing more than by commenting on that this kind of procedures are very sensitive to legal. So it appears to me.
Mm-hmm. All right, I think I'll borrow your words. It could be helpful. I think that's what Ron is saying, too. It could be helpful. And I don't see Aubrey thinking it wouldn't be helpful. So I don't see a time pressure to this either. How about I can't step? Ken, do you have any opinion? We'll take your opinion on this.
I don't think that the changes that we discussed today in 5 or 5.1, 5.2 would need to go back through legal. There's no legal consequence, I don't think, to referring to a procedure in another document. That document may, in fact, go through legal procedure of its own. I don't know whether it has or not.
Well, I would say, then, that being the case, considering all these pink comments are coming from ICANN staff legal, and we've addressed all of them, then let's get this document to OSC.
This is Ken also. We can try to figure. This is going into the GNSO operating procedures, correct?
Correct.
Okay, good. So, you know, one of the options I can also try to do is to really just sort of format it so we can go right into a chapter, and just like we've done with the other one, right, with Section 4 voting, I'll look into procedures and see exactly where this goes, and we give it a chapter heading and format it so that it can be approved to go into the procedures.
Perfect.
Does that make sense?
To get it in there.
It does to me.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so Ken, we're asking you two things, the 5.1, 5.2, do your thing on the language, and offer a recommendation of where you feel could best fit in the rules of procedure. And then upon those things, if you could send it back to the list, we will determine as a work team to send it on to the OSC for their review. How's that sound as a plan?
Sounds like a good plan. The only question is one of timing, Chair. We're now, will we have one more call before Nairobi? I think Nairobi is probably our next meeting.
Nairobi is our next meeting.
So wouldn't it be good if we could just perhaps see this in the next couple of days, you know, as quickly as Ken could turn it around and just put in our verbal opinion on it, and if in fact we all agree that's fine, good to go, we can get it off to the OSC in advance so that that it could be reviewed, and so the review has happened prior to the discussion in Nairobi, as opposed to them getting on the OSC getting it on the table the day of their meeting.
Okay, so no one would have objection if Ken sends it to the list, and after a few days, I don't really see any comment in the affirmative or negative that I can take the liberty of sending to the OSC as a well-deliberated work team document.
Works for me.
Okay. And refresh my memory. Am I supposed to be sending over to the OSC the Section 4 and 4.5 now, right? Yeah, and the other document, right? I'm supposed to do that. Like, I could do that today, right?
I'm not quite clear on what you're saying. So the other document, the abstention document, we're good to go with, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So I can send those two documents. Okay. And then this one, when Ken gives us the new version, a couple days, no one would have a problem if I took the liberty of sending this over to the OSC as well.
Yeah. And let's put a target this time next week and sort of say, okay, if nobody's commented on it by that time, you can just pull the trigger on it.
Okay.
If that's enough time for you, Ken, to turn this around for us in the next, let's say by Monday we're seeing this thing.
Oh, this is Ken. Yes, I'm going to try to get this out today while it's fresh on my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. Perfect.
Okay. I will do those things. Well, with that, can we, okay, next thing on our plate, okay, that I think we really need to jump on and is the board seat 13 procedures and getting those into the rules of procedure as well. And I have to admit, while I understand a procedure and process took place, I have not looked at what that was. I'm not up to speed on what it was all about. All I know is that we've got to do something about them. So I would like to put that as our next item to discuss, and Nairobi would be the place.
Chair, this is Ken. May I make a comment?
Yeah.
I don't remember if I said anything to this team or not, but I certainly said to my colleagues that I would be happy to take a shot at drafting the generalized procedures for board seat 13 and 14. What the council did was an expedient temporary measure that only dealt with seat 13, and it was done in the form of an addendum to the GNSO operating procedures, rather than writing them into a section, you know, in a paragraph where they might belong permanently. So I have still a to-do to write that procedure. I have not done that yet.
Mm-hmm.
There's at least one or two more that the GCOT could take up. One I sent to you earlier, and that is in Section 4.4 of voting. There's a section there called absentee voting, and I have suggested that the team think about whether or not we should specify the conditions under when absentee voting is permitted, or we should say it's always permitted except under these conditions when it's not allowed. And the way the procedure is currently written, I think, is limiting. And we've already had a case of it. The council wanted to do work on this board seat 13-14 matter, and it turns out absentee voting isn't permitted for that. And I think we should think about that. So that would be another item that you could take up while I work on board seat 13 and 14. And then there's another one. We have term limits that have to be changed in the procedures, section 2.1. I have already written that up. I sent it to my colleagues, Margie and Liz, and basically that I could send that to you today. That's another one that needs to be incorporated into the GNSO operating procedures because it's specifically mentioned in the bylaws that the procedures cover how term limits are handled.
Okay, that's a great suggestion. Yeah, if you can get that over to us, that would be...
In other words, we could certainly fill your itinerary... But the board seat 13-14 isn't going to come up for a while. It has a bit more time on it. It is mentioned in the bylaws, and so we do need to get it done. But I don't think it's there's any pressing urgency there.
Can I ask a question? So the absentee voting, that's also in the bylaws at the moment, but that'll move into this document, I assume. And I didn't quite catch what the last issue was in terms of term limits. Isn't that already set in the bylaws, is that somehow changing?
What the bylaws say is it talks about a special exception or a special circumstance that can occur.
Oh, the geographical issue.
Yeah, and it says and a special circumstance is defined in the GNSO operating procedures.
That whole thing of. We don't have anybody from that region of the world, therefore.
Correct. And the council has to. All right. So I wrote up a set of procedures to deal with that situation. They're not extensive or long and not complicated, but it would seem to me that would be a GCOT agenda item,
yeah,
as long as you're still in existence. Because it is a rule. It's going to be in the procedures. And so I have that section 2.1. I can send that to Ray and to the team, and you guys can take a look at that, and that could be on your agenda. Now that the SOI deal, Julie was really concerned and wanted to get the DOI-SOI thing completed, and you have now just done that. And so then this absentee voting, Aubrey, just to clarify that, there is language already in the GNSO operating procedures that deals with it, but it's my opinion that it's a little bit awkward. Because what it does is it specifies four conditions under which absentee voting may be done. And they're not very broad. They're very narrow. And so when the case of that board seat 13 came up, one of my colleagues said, well, can we just do an absentee vote if we don't have enough counselors? And the answer is, even if you have a quorum, no, you can't, because an absentee vote is not allowed for that type of motion. And what I'm suggesting is here the GCOT's got an opportunity right now, since we're working on Section 4, to change that language around to say, look, absentee voting is always permitted except under the following conditions. And I don't know what they are, but maybe the team, you guys can discuss it and say, we can only think of one case where absentee voting shouldn't be permitted. You know, maybe it's some a PDP measure that has to go to the board. Well, you know what I'm saying? Maybe there are none, in which case...
Well, let me offer this then. So we're saying here, really, basically, that Section 4 voting is not done. I mean, we can't... So if I send this stuff over to the OST today saying, here's our new Section 4 that includes now the language for Section 4.5, and then... You know, they go through their gyration, and then it gets approved even through the council level. Are we going to come back later and say, okay, we're modifying Section 4 again? Or should we give them a whole baked pie at one time, even if we're not getting it to them right now?
This is Ken, and I think that's an extremely well-phrased question. The particular paragraph that deals with absentee voting is just 4.4. And it doesn't pertain to any other section. It doesn't have any bleed-overs or crossovers. It's just 4.4. So even if we send the whole Section 4 up to the OSC with 4.4 the way it is now, I think you're okay. We can then come back and say, oh, by the way, we did some additional thinking about 4.4, and we want to replace 4.4 with this new language. I think that will work.
Any other thoughts on that?
Well, it sounds like a good way forward from my perspective. I think that's as Ken has put forward, we have an opportunity right now to correct that, and so we should step up and do it.
You mean 4.4?
Yep. I like his recommendation. I think what we should do is let's have a look at that as what he would say.
But in the meantime, go ahead and send for review all of Section 4.
Yes, absolutely. And maybe just put a placeholder in there. We're also, square brackets. We're reviewing. There may be an addendum to this with regard to absentee voting.
In fact, there is a comment in the document that I put there already.
Perfect.
And I suggested to Ray that you could either remove it or leave it, but that would let the OSC know that that section is being worked on in a separate matter. So that's
okay. Yeah, we can
there.
We can let the OSC know, but I think now it changes my idea of recommending the OSC that they should get this in front of the council. I don't know if we want the OSC to go ahead and review, but I don't know if we want to get in front of the council until all of Section 4 voting is done. While 4.4 may not relate to the other sections, I think it's best that when we ask them to approve voting, they can look at everything in the right context.
This is Avery. I wanted to ask a chance about the absentee voting. Is that wording and those restrictions to it were to some extent, I think, or even completely, a recommendation from legal. And so I would tread cautiously until we really know what we're treading into before looking at changing them.
All right. Well, let's get up to speed on the section on absentee voting. I do recall that legal, had some say in that. But I think the suggestion by Ken is good. Is for us to make that a high priority item so that we can finish Section 4 and be done with Section 4 voting. I think in the meantime we can go ahead and send to the OSC the sections that are completed, with the qualification that Section 4.4 is still being looked at.
Can I make a counter suggestion?
Yes.
Which is that we send it as is without saying that is still an open issue, and ask them whether they think that's something that we need to do something more about.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion. Any thoughts? Ron, Ken, Wolf, that's not a bad suggestion to me. Others?
This is Ron. I could go either way on that one.
Okay.
But I do think it's important we don't hesitate in getting the other documentation out. I don't think we should delay while we deal with this.
Uh-huh. Should it, just a small little matter, but should we recommend, when I send this over to the OSC, should we recommend that the OSC try to get this in front of the council as part of the Nairobi agenda? Not to vote on it, but to discuss.
Yeah. I think so.
Okay.
Because it's also the council that may have an opinion on
we need some more work here, we need clarifications there, et cetera. So I think a checkpoint with the council would not be a bad thing.
This is Ken.
What that means?
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, sorry.
I just wanted to echo that. This abstentions matter, as we all know from having really struggled with it for a long time, is very complicated and very complex. And the sooner that the council begins discussing what we have crafted here, the better it will be. And yeah, even if 4.4, that I don't think that's relevant at all, and it's not in the critical path.
Okay, well, I like the guidance. So I like the idea. We'll ask for guidance on Section 4.4. We will say that we've completed as much as we can complete on all other sections of Section 4. We are now offering the OSC for their review, and we are recommending for the OSC to get Section 4 in front of the council for their review as well.
Just one point of clarity, Ken, again. I did mention to both Sam and Dan Halloran that I had suggested to the GCOT that we completely revise Section 4.4 to change its orientation from, allowing to sort of disallowing that whole thing. And I didn't get any pushback from them at the time. I didn't provide new language for them to look at, but I did put comments in that was one of our goals, or one of the suggestions I was making.
Okay. Well, I like the idea. Let's ask the OSC members for some advice on Section 4.4. I like that idea. Let's do that. Any objections?
Well, just for my full speaking, so do you have a revised version? I don't find the revised version of Section 4.4. I only have the existing one, which is these four cases, showing. Ken, did you provide a revised version for that already? I'm sorry.
This is Ken. No, I have not rewritten that section. I simply made... I basically just made a suggestion to Ray privately in an email that said, this is an area I think needs to be looked at. Are you interested in taking it up with the team? Here's my reason for bringing it forward. I did not to try to rewrite it.
I honestly didn't act on it.
I just would like to understand the process. If we forward the new section 4, let me say, to the OSC and the council for approval. So we need a new text, isn't it? To do it. Or did I misunderstand that? Because at the time being, it's still the existing absentee voting paragraph 4.4. So how do we proceed? So with regards to the OSC right now.
Let me take another shot at it. So Section 4, with 4.4 the way it is right now, without making any change, is perfectly okay. In other words, it is now a completely integral document. It's been reviewed by legal, and what you see now is a product that could be sent to the OSC. We don't have to make any comment about 4.4 now or later. It could stay the way it is. I just saw an opportunity... Because I was looking at that whole section, I thought, boy, 4.4 really seems a little strange to me, because we had this case already with the council just recently where we wouldn't have been able to use absentee voting for a particular motion that didn't seem like – it seemed like it ought to have been covered. And so I just raised the question. It's an opportunity only. There's no requirement, and it has nothing to do with the abstentions discussion.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm looking to get. We're kind of thinking to get advice from the OSC is this an opportunity?
Okay.
Do you see an opportunity? And please review Section 4.4 and provide your advice on whether, I don't know, I'll word something.
Mm-hmm. Right, on whether it needs to be revised, expanded, or whatever. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Ray, if you'd like me to give you something there to look at, I'd be happy to do that.
In terms of what?
In terms of a phrase that you could stick into your email to send to the OSC on that subject.
I'll take it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. All right. We've kind of gone over, and I want to thank everybody for spending extra time today on the call. While we are asking for advice from the OSC on absentee voting, I still think that we can, as part of Nairobi, have that as a topic, you know, as well. And if we have, and if we received advice from the OSC, that will be useful for us at that time. So I'm not suggesting, Ken, that we don't take the opportunity. I'm just suggesting that we also get advice on what others think.
This is Ken. I understand.
Okay. Any other ideas for agenda items for Nairobi? And again, I think Ken made a statement earlier that I have to understand, too. It assumes we're still in existence, right? I mean, we could be disbanded as part of Nairobi, right?
This is Ken. I think the intention is to extend all of the teams to Brussels, at least.
Okay.
Well, in that regard, Chair, the question that I have in my mind is, it would be nice if we had a recap of just what is left on our list of things to do at some point, if somebody could just sort of bring those all to the table.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps someone from staff has been checking these things off. Julie was pretty diligent about that in the past.
And it seems new things are coming our way. It's like
what I'm getting at. This is exactly my point, is that I would like to know what have we completed, you know, in terms of the original mandate, and what new stuff do we have to deal with? Because I'd like to know that we actually finished the original mandate, if in fact we have, or how close we are to completing that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's an agenda item, right?
Yeah.
Right. Who is best to provide us that kind of overview? I suppose it would be staff, right?
Yeah, well, and maybe perhaps Julie, because she was, you know, she was the one on top of it before, so if it might be brought to her attention.
And Rob, you know, I think Julie would so Julie would deliver, but she would seek out, you know, Rob's opinion and others, I suppose, right?
Yeah, this is Ken. I'll make sure that this question gets in front of Julie and Rob. It's a question of sort of recap on the GCOT. Yeah, agenda list, right? A GCOT work list.
Yeah.
Yeah, great suggestion, Ron. I think that's probably our best agenda item.
Yeah.
Which is not what I sent over to Glenn and posted on our wiki site. All right. Well, anyway, with that said, is there any other business? And if not, I'm going to go ahead and ask that we adjourn the call. We'll pick things up again as part of Nairobi.
Okay.
Okay, great. Thanks again for spending extra time today. And if we could end the recording and adjourn the call.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for participating in today's conference call. You may disconnect at this time.
Oh, thank you, Joseph.